Okay, we're all right to go ahead and start. Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone out tonight to our CDRA October 24th, 2023, 6 o'clock special meeting. And we'll start off with a roll call. Here.
Mike.
Here.
Russ.
Here.
Robbie.
I think he's probably still on his way home. Here. Okay, next item is we'll turn some time over to you, Mont, or to Darren, or Devin.
Of the industrial park. One reason we wanted to do this is because of the 10-year plan. The 10-year plan under state law, this is the document that is a legal basis for all land use regulation. And when we did the 10-year plan, there was a number of questions that were asked in the survey analysis about the industrial park. For example, 70%, and by the way, the survey was done in a way that we used a statistical formula where we could, the survey could represent significantly the population of the city as a whole. And 70% of the people surveyed said the industrial park was either successful or highly successful, or wanted to continue to expand. In the industrial park, when we first put it together, and this is why it's referred to the general plan, is because the general plan, as I said, the State Code 1098401, the general plan is the basis, the legal basis, for making land use changes and ordinances. So our purpose was to take a look at the ordinance we had for the manufacturing industrial park, see how realistic it was compared to what's actually going on down there. Because the ordinance was somewhat aspirational. When we put that together, we had drawn heavily from Springfield's industrial. And my aspiration looked from the standpoint that we really had these broad goals. It wasn't very long until we began to realize that some of that was not realistic in this economy. We had businesses that could not meet all those requirements. So the purpose of bringing Devin aboard is to take a look at what's actually taking place on the ground down there, comparing that with the ordinance, and then based upon that, we'll get back with you. This is kind of like a progress report tonight and answer questions. Then we'll do a final report. We'll involve the Planning Commission in terms of the general plan in case they want to make proposals to come back to you to change the ordinance. Now, one thing that is interesting about this is that the general plan did, one of the things about the industrial park, and look at the land-based value, the base land value of the industrial park in 2001. 20 years to the day when this was prepared. And the land use value in 2001 was $6 million in the industrial park. In 2021, it was $20 million. So it went from $6 million to $20 million. Now, you say, Mark, what about inflation? So if I use an inflation calculator, and I just look at inflation of what $6 million was in 2001, and in 2021, it'd be about $9 million. This is inflation. So you've got $20 million, which we showed we had, land value down there. So you've gone double the inflation rate. So the industrial park has been successful. The survey shows people want to continue with that success and maybe even expand. And so we thought it'd be very helpful to take a look at the ordinances to see what's realistic based on what is there, to repeat this, emphasize this point again, what is really there versus what the ordinance says they should be doing. And that's the role that the ordinance plays, and the time is now his.
Okay, so I'm Devin Fowles. My office is a home office in just north of Manti. I work for Science Engineering.
I am a senior planner in the Community Development Department. I've been there for about a year and a half. And prior to that, I was working for Ephraim City for about a little over three years. And then before that, I was working for Sanpete County as a zoning administrator and enforcement officer. And it's been a great experience to come out and get to know Mount Pleasant City a little bit better and whatnot. And as Mark mentioned, for tonight, it's a progress report. And so if you have any objections, please let me know. But I was planning on just letting you know what steps have been taken up to this point, and then answer whatever questions you got, if that's okay. So to start, we were contacted about approximately 2 months ago by Mark to come in and do basically two things, a violation analysis of the entire industrial park based on the current municipal code, industrial code. And then the other thing was to modify the, or give some recommendations of some updates that could be made with the current municipality code as well. And so to be in line with the state code, and also to still give the municipality some teeth to enforce and help the industrial park to continue to grow and be productive as it continues to catch the eyes of business owners and developers and whatnot. So we started off by reviewing the code, obviously, to get familiar with what codes are and requirements are required for property owners to comply with. After that was done, I went out on foot and I walked the entire subdivision and inspected. I had a checklist of all the requirements from the code, and each lot, I went through each on the checklist for each lot. After each lot was analyzed, I took that back, compiled the information, and then after that was all compiled, I sent it off to Mont to review and move forward with that information. Afterwards, I attempted to contact each of the property owners. I tried going on foot first, and I didn't have a whole lot of success getting a hold of them. I was trying to give them the courtesy of letting them know what violations have been found, you know, just so that they can, if they want to, try and mitigate those before it gets turned over to the CDRA. In my attempt, I was not very successful. There's not very many business owners on site. It's either their employees or people who are renting from them. And the employees were not very excited about getting the property owner's information out for me to get in contact with them. And so from there, I had to resort to phone calls, which I was not very successful in making phone calls either, because what phone numbers I was able to find, they were either wrong or they never responded to my voicemails or text messages. And so the attempt to contact property owners did not go as well as I hoped. But nonetheless, we still have the analysis completed, and that information is in the hands of the Mont at this point. So once that was completed, we moved forward with the update recommendations to the zoning code. Again, I looked at state code to see where, if anywhere in the city's code, it was not in line with the state code. In most places, it actually was in line. You know, the state is pretty general when it comes to requirements for industrial park codes at the municipal level. And so from there, I looked at the analysis to see what violations the businesses which ones they have, and which ones were not so much, how would you say? So I looked at quite a few industrial park codes, and I looked at the violations that were not consistent with a lot of the industrial park codes that I've looked at, you know. And so when I went in and made some of those modifications, it was based on consistency of other industrial park codes that I have seen and can help write in the past. Some of those updates include parking. Now there is parking in there, hard surface. A lot of the business owners and a lot of the businesses on site there do not have hard surface parking. It's gravel, and there are very few that have actual cement or asphalt parking spaces. And so that was modified to allow, and this is just one of the examples, that was modified to allow business owners to have gravel as long as it was approved through city council. And there's exceptional circumstances that would allow them to have that. Fencing. The code requires that the fencing that goes in is masonry walls, basically. That has been one item that, with the few people that I did talk to, they mentioned, like, that is an expense that we just simply cannot afford, on top of us trying to survive with the business that we currently have. And then looking at a couple of the other industrial park zoning codes, none of them had masonry fencing requirements, but they did have fencing requirements for side obscuring purposes, you know. A lot of them did have in there, you know, to have nice fencing, not just the chain link fence with really skinny slats, you know. Some of them did require vinyl fencing or some other type of good looking fencing, you know, just to help with the visual appeal of the park. Landscaping, it was the code currently has some landscaping requirements. I felt like, based on the conversations I've had with Monica as well as looking at the general plan, I felt like the purpose of this industrial park was to not be like the traditional industrial park where it's a cement jungle, you know. They wanted to have some beauty in it, some you know, some lawns, some trees, some kind of landscaping to make it have some kind of a side appeal, you know. And so we added a little bit to the landscaping portion of that code to allow the city to enforce it with a little bit more teeth. Because the current code seemed like it was lacking just a tiny bit with teeth. And so, again, we modified that to make that more a priority item as developers come in and as businesses continue to move forward. Conditional use permits, that's a big one. Over the last, I would say, the first time I started hearing about conditional use permits being the first time I heard about municipalities and counties being encouraged to steer away from conditional use permits was about 5 years ago. And then at each of the APA conferences, the American Planners Association conferences, as well as the Utah League of Cities and Towns conferences, they preached this. Try not to have a whole lot of conditional use permit requirements in your code. Get the conditions written in your code and make it a permitted use so that you're not causing an undue burden on your staff planning commission and city council from people coming in. You know, have those requirements listed out so that they can move forward with their application, and the city doesn't have to be taxed on time. And so we modified that just a little bit to make it so that it's a permitted use, but with additional requirements that developers are supposed to follow. Because up to this point, I feel like the business owners that are there, and what few conversations I did have, a lot of them are kind of on the rope track now because of the last couple of years of the economy the way it's been, you know. And so having the additional requirements and everything is something that's sure to cripple them based on my conversations with them. And so, like I said, the hope here is to make this as far as this update goes, to make this easier on the city staff, the planning commission, and city council, as well as give a more realistic expectation for the business owners to be able to comply with city code and not try flying under the radar like they currently are in most cases.
Kevin, yeah. You have an excellent point in your analysis. Could you use as an example a major employer down there? Because even as recently as last week, I got some complaints. Far West Construction and SiteServe, they've added another $1 million in investment down there. They have 30, they've added 30 new employees and retained 30. And the ordinance says you have to do stuff under the roof. And could you kind of use them as an example of how you're trying to make the reality fit with the aspiration?
Yeah, that was also one of the areas that is recommended to be changed, is the requirement of all business to be performed within a building. Okay, a lot of your industrial businesses are quite large, you know, and in order to operate, some of them can't afford to put up a 10, 20, 30, 50, 100,000 square foot building to have their entire operation happen within in the building. And so one of the recommendations in there was to add an outdoor use, so not take away the indoor use requirement, but add an outdoor use section in there based on conditions, you know. So if they're going to have their operation outside, they need to have approvals. They have to, and that approval and their presentation is something that the city council is able to look at and say, you know, the hardship that you're presenting is or is not enough to warrant outdoor use. So it does give them the ability to do work outside with the approval of the city council. Now, if they are going to have uses done outside, there are certain things that, again, as recommendations, that they can do to help with the site appeal issues. Fencing, landscaping, those are some of the main ones that you're going to hear in industrial park codes. And so part of their presentation would have to include those certain conditions. You know, but yeah, that was definitely one area that looking at a lot of those businesses down there, and the few people I talked to, but I mentioned that their operation is taking place outside, outdoors. I heard about it for a couple minutes from some of them, you know, but it's to be expected, you know, in those kinds of circumstances. And so, and I can see where they're coming from. But anyway, that's, those are some of the main changes that we recommended. The final draft is, we're currently working on the final draft with Mont, and then as soon as that's completed, then we plan on having a hard copy ready for you to review. And if there's changes, I mean, these aren't our final recommendations. If there's changes that you want to see in there, we can modify that to your liking. But without going through a formal ordinance update process, we feel like we did a good job with the information that we had on hand to move forward with those recommendations. So, any questions? Sorry, that was a...
I had one on, like, living there, because I know that's one that's been brought up a number of times, of what you seen as you went through their recommendations, or... Like, we know we've got people in a trailer that's living there. We've got one person staying in his building. Yeah, one has an apartment in the basement.
So I was not aware of those, but yeah, he's right on target. We have both sides of those warnings because there's a bleeding issue there.
Across the board from the codes that I've seen, not supposed to have single family housing, and this is based off of multiple codes that I've looked at, you know, so I guess you could allow it if you wanted to, but the majority of your industrial park codes do not allow any kind of living inside of the industrial park. And so as far as my recommendation would be to maintain that stance of it's for business purposes and industrial park purposes only. And then comes the enforcement part. So as far as this whole process goes, in my experience at Ephraim and also at San Pete County, the hardest part is not so much the enforcement. It is the uglier part, you know, but the hardest part is actually finding the time with what limited, every municipality and the county, they are all short-staffed, you know. There's not a whole lot of time to go around. So the hardest part is actually getting out there on site and doing the inspection. Once you get the inspection in place, now you've got a direction. You've got bullet points of what the next steps are, and it's a matter of making sure that you go through with those steps. And so as far as living in the industrial park, the best way to keep that from happening is have a continual inspection done, you know, like once a half a year, you know, once a quarter, every half a year or whatever, go in, inspect, get your analysis compiled, and then follow the bullet points. Because if you don't, then people start creeping in, and they start pushing the fence a little bit, and it's going to kind of spiral out of control. So we found that out the hard way at Ephraim with one of the mobile home parks that they are still currently trying to bring up to city code. And
yeah.
The staff is doing as best they can, but they're short staff as well. So.
There's a whole lot of empty buildings out there. There's some that haven't even done nothing with the landscaping. Is there a time period on that as to when they have to be a viable business? Because I think they built them buildings and prospect buildings is what they are.
Now what happens is if you have a business presence within a year, a full-fledged business, 2 years, what happened with Seth and Sam and Levi Wright? I talked to them today because in conjunction with this, we also have to fill out a 9-year report to EDA. We do show... the 9-year report is about $5.8 million in investment down there, and about 138 jobs retained and committed. But what they've done on the Wrights, for example, Levi has been quite successful, although his original plan to locate his buildings wasn't worth. He's got a lot of employees because he's leased those out to manufacturing facilities. I talked to Sam, he's trying to do that away, because some of the people had aspirations. When they start, they finally have the money. They put up a building. I talked to Sam Wright today. He's finishing his, and he's trying to find someone he can lease to because his plan to expand his own business has kind of gone downhill. Yeah, this is the whole idea, is to try to help them, like I said before, carrot, not a stick, to help them meet up to goals. So our whole goal is this, to bring to the RDA a draft of what we think the reality is versus what the coast is. And after that, it's not any more business, because at that point, it's up to the planning commission and the city council to move forward to amend the ordinance. Our goal is to give you a draft to show what the ordinance says versus what's happening and make recommendations on how you might want to change it. That's what we're trying to do.
Okay. Yeah, I walk out there so I see all these places. There's some of them that looks like they're using it for a place to dump all their junk. I don't know.
Those are the ones that those aren't the new buildings, but that's we talked about that upstairs. Those are violations that we've got to correct. We're going to show you the result, the final draft, and it's up to you to take it to the enforcement phase or what you want to do after they give it to you. It's also then it becomes the planning commission if you want to amend the ordinance to make it more realistic as to what's actually down there versus what the ordinance says should be done. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The junk, your current code does have a nuisance ordinance in it, you know, and so all the junk that's out there, that stuff, you can jump on that pretty quick. The ordinance update recommendations, those you have to wait until after those are adopted, changed, modified, and then adopted to enforce any of that. But as far as the nuisance stuff goes, junk cars, just junk in general from, building materials or the product from the operation materials, that kind of stuff is all under the nuisance umbrella of enforcement, and that can be enforced today.
Yeah, I was just wondering if maybe they were thinking they're going to use it as fill or something out there and push it in, cover it up with a bunch of dirt or something, because it's been there quite a while.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know.
Those are things you can correct, but like I say, we're giving you a draft and you decide what you want to do.
Is the Watts, what are we doing with the Watts property there next to Pearson's, next to?
He had a $25,000 grant and he missed the deadline, so it's going to be recycled to somebody else. He's developing it, but he couldn't meet the timeline to get the $25,000 grant, so he had this.
Yeah.
That grant is coming from Sampson County.
Well, when that comes up, I know Brian's interested in it.
So one of my big questions, I thought in the ordinance said you could not build a building to rent it out, that you had to put your own business in there.
The guidelines were that you had to come up with a plan to the planning commission that you're actually going to have a viable business in there within 2 years. Over time, when people have financial problems, if they can bring in a tenant who have the capability of meeting the goals that the original person had to have a viable business, they allowed that to happen. You're right. The bylaws have started off. You're absolutely right.
In the bylaws, right?
Yeah.
So bylaws versus ordinance. Ordinance is, so as far as this inspection and everything went, it was inspected based on city code. Not based on the bylaws, because essentially the city code was the low hanging fruit. Okay, to get the nuisance stuff identified, as well as you can get your city council and your enforcement process can go a lot quicker if their code is the one that you're trying to enforce, right? However, a city is usually not going to get involved with enforcing bylaws, okay? Like HOA stuff, that's the HOA's responsibility to enforce that.
He's not even addressing the bylaw. He's just addressing the code and what's really happening.
Right.
There's nothing in the code that says you can't rent it out. The bylaws, it was run awry because we're trying to create ownership and give incentive to that spot. Sorry.
No, that's good.
I'm kind of long-winded. I apologize. But, okay, we'll get back to you with the final draft, the final product, and then you can comment on it. And it'll be a redraft, and you can comment on changes. Then once you have that in your hands, if you decide you want to move forward on changing the ordinance to reflect reality versus what is there, then pass it on to the planning commission.
There's probably a ton of violations, right? You've seen a ton.
I've got each lot, each of them got there.
Yes, I was afraid. Yeah.
Violation and there's quite a few. There are some in there that didn't have any. So that was
sweet. Yeah.
Some of the really blatant could be remedied pretty quickly.
Right.
Just got a car on a vacant lot.
Right. Yeah.
And you have really not a whole lot of lots that have a ton. Handful that have a lot of violations, and then there's a couple in there that have, a violation of a gravel driveway.
Okay.
The main problem still goes back to if you can't enforce them, it doesn't do any good anyway.
Right.
So if they want to enforce it, then we can do something. Until it gets enforced, then we're not doing anything.
Right, Sam. You made that point before. You're right on top. Okay, well, thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Hey, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
Sam seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay.